Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Adrian. We're at the corner of 77th and Columbus, staring at a storefront, and I've brought you here because I know you were on the scene in Brooklyn circa 2007, 2008. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
I'm in New York with Adrian Anderson, the ultimate Brooklyn food maven. Adrian has been working with chefs and food media around New York for years, both making the food and making it look beautiful.
I was just getting out of restaurants and starting to work as a food stylist. I was maybe still living in Williamsburg, maybe Bushwick around that time.
That's what I was hoping for.
Adrian co-owned the studio where all the food magazines shot, and she did a lot of the styling. So when I wanted someone to walk me through the ultimate cautionary tale in the world of craft chocolate, a tale that has a lot to do with the looks and appearances of a bygone Brooklyn era, I knew who'd ask.
I feel like we were at the beginning, or kind of the early stages of farm-to-table, and I think that we were still in this era of discovery and excitement about sourcing and honesty and authenticity in food.
And in that, like, budding good future, suddenly appears a new chocolate maker right in Williamsburg, the Mass Brothers.
Yeah.
Do you remember when they first came onto your radar?
I can't pinpoint the exact moment. It was more of a sort of a creeping light leak at the periphery of your consciousness. Stores that had the cool food at the time started carrying Mast, and it was really noticeable because the design of the wrappers was so good.
It really was. Every bar looked like it was wrapped in beautiful, old-fashioned wallpaper with minimal words. In an era when most chocolate bars were still heavy on the bling, these bars seemed handmade and real. And the food world gobbled them up.
How do you make absolutely incredible Valentine's Day chocolate? Well, here at the Mast Brothers Chocolate Factory, they start with organic cacao beans.
The Mast Brothers, it's very artsy, fancy.
Just as important as that artsy packaging of the bars was the packaging of the brothers themselves. Rick and Michael Mast, two young guys with bushy red beards and Victorian clothing, slinging burlap sacks of cacao beans for the eager cameras.
We're at Mast Brothers Chocolate in Brooklyn. Rick, your place is a chocolate nirvana, basically.
Yeah.
I love it. What makes you guys so different?
About making chocolate from scratch, all in-house. We're bringing in beans from all around the
world. All over the world, right?
So, like Brooklyn itself, it's a chocolate bar that's made up of things from all around the world. So today we're going to show you how we make our Brooklyn blend. I'd love to show it to you.
The aesthetic was ubiquitous at the time. It was inescapable if you were... the bearded Brooklyn bro selling cheese or slinging cocktails.
Suddenly, the Masts had fawning coverage in the New York Times and Bon Appetit, new shops in London and L.A., and a global spotlight as America's breakout craft chocolate maker. Their glass-walled Williamsburg factory, where you could watch real live hipsters making chocolate, became a tourist mecca.
But there was a story. There was that big story. I'm sure you know what it was. I don't remember.
Oh, yes. That's why I'm here.
Some people in the food world, the chocolate world, are calling them frauds. The Milli Vanilli of chocolate, which is a very strong thing to say.
They were remelting other kinds of chocolate into their chocolate bars, especially in the early days when they were claiming they were bean to bar.
Chocolate alloys.
That's right.
Which is going against the purity, the nature of the very earnest looks in the big beards, essentially.
In 2015, a blogger for the website DallasFood.org broke the story that would bring the Mass Brothers down. During their rise to fame, when they were the poster beards for authenticity, they weren't actually making some of their own chocolate. They were buying it from other companies, melting it down, pouring it into their own molds, then wrapping it up in old-timey paper. At first, the Masks denied everything, but eventually, they were forced to acknowledge that in their early years, they'd been remelters. They claimed they'd gone straight long ago, but the damage was done. The shops disappeared, the factory shuttered, and the Masks themselves faded away.
That felt like the end. After that, like the expose had come out, they had been mocked relentlessly. Everything closed down. It felt like it was officially over.
And so we all thought. But now, here we are. Look up at the storefront and tell me what you see.
I see that we've got a hand-painted window that says Mast Market, established 2021. And there's a bunch of people inside. It looks like the 2011 Brooklyn aesthetic is alive and well.
Yes, the Masts are back, selling chocolate and coffee and housewares and body soaps in a squeaky clean space that could double as a Williams-Sonoma. The remelters have reformed. But don't be too quick to blame the Masts. Remelting, style over substance, for all the controversy, in the world of big chocolate, that's just business as usual. But to understand just how bad it gets, we're going to have to head into the belly of the beast. From Kaleidoscope and iHeart Podcasts, this is Obsessions, Wild Chocolate. I'm Rowan Jacobson. Chapter 4, Big Bad Chocolate.
So let's turn to...
Okay, so here we are in Whole Foods. Here we are in Whole Foods.
Whole Foods, Brooklyn, right?
Whole Foods, near
the foodiest place on the planet.
One of them.
I'm with Clay Gordon, the creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com, which is the world's biggest online community for chocolate fans. Clay teaches chocolate appreciation classes. He consults with chocolate companies. He wrote a great guide to chocolate. And he was on the scene when the Masts had their big run.
We all wanted them to succeed, right?
Because they were bringing people.
They were driving
from
acceptance. They were
bad chocolate to from cheap chocolate,
industrial chocolate into craft chocolate, and they were the people who were the gateway. People came to them, right? And they were the introduction.
This was during that strange stretch of the 2000s when chocolate suddenly became virtuous. Instead of a guilty treat, it pivoted into a worldly, earnest, possibly even healthy luxury. The candy aisles exploded with snazzy bars advertising their high cacao percentage, socially responsible business practices, and exotic cacao sources. Of course, the first chocolate makers to do such bars really were tiny operations that walked the walk. But it didn't take long before they were joined in the virtuous section by big chocolate, the handful of giant corporations that dominate the chocolate business. But to look at the shelves in Whole Foods, you'd never know it.
It's really, really hard to understand what it is we have presented here. So, for example, there's a brand called Lily's. Mm-hmm. So Lily's is known for sugar-free chocolate. When most people look, at a bar of lilies, they'll go, ooh, it's fair trade.
Right.
Right. The other thing that's really important to know is that the corporate parent of lilies is Hershey.
Hershey?
The Hershey Company. Yes. Lilies is owned by Hershey. And it should be known that Hershey is a named defendant in a lawsuit having to do with knowingly profiting from illegal labor in West Africa.
Chocolate, as you may or may not know, has some serious issues.
U.S. Senators Sherrod Brown and Ron Wyden arguing that there is evidence the Ivory Coast relies on forced child labor to harvest cocoa.
Instead of attending school, these children sort through cocoa beans on a plantation.
The Washington Post reported in June that more than 2 million children were engaged in the practice on West African cocoa farms.
The big chocolate companies don't actually own cacao farms. They are many links away, at the other end of the supply chain. And this makes it difficult to tell where the cocoa originated.
So their argument is that, hey, we're just buying these beans from Cargill or whoever.
Yeah, right.
But the reality
well,
is...
they do know.
They've got a pretty darn good idea.
They have accepted responsibility, many of them, by signing the Hurricane-Engel Protocol. They know that these are issues.
In the 1990s, a wave of news stories exposed the shocking amount of child trafficking and slavery in the chocolate trade. In 2001, the U.S. Congress responded, led by Senator Tom Harkin and Representative Elliot Engel. Together, they introduced the idea of slapping a label on chocolate products, indicating whether or not the product was free of child slave labor.
We need a better commitment, a stronger commitment from the chocolate industry worldwide.
That's Tom Harkin.
Families need to know that when they buy chocolate in whatever form, that a lot of that's being produced by what is really, in essence, child slavery.
To no one's surprise, the industry freaked out. Chocolate is a $100 billion business. And a child slavery logo splashed across every candy bar wouldn't exactly be great for sales.
Big Chocolate said, you know what? We don't need you to enact laws. We will take care of it ourselves, the problem ourselves. And every time their self-imposed deadline approached, they kicked the cocoa pod down the road another 5 years.
In 2005, Big Chocolate promised to get child labor out of the supply chain by 2010. In 2010, they said they could do it by 2020. In 2020, they said that they couldn't even trace where most of their cacao comes from. The problem is that cacao is a commodity, bought and sold by the shipload by traders in New York and London, then stored in giant warehouses until some company buys it. Between the farmer who grows it and the chocolate bar on the supermarket shelf, it can change hands a dozen times. It's nearly impossible to trace that path. Not that some companies aren't trying.
All right, so now you're pulling a Tony's Chocolonely bar.
Pulling Tony's Chocolonely. They sold over $100 million in chocolate last year.
Wow.
Right.
Tony's is a Dutch company founded 20 years ago with a singular mission to eradicate slavery from the chocolate supply chain. Tony's groovy, peace-and-love packaging gives them this Ben & Jerry's vibe. But there's a key difference.
So Tony's is not a chocolate maker. Tony's is a marketing company.
Right.
They produce chocolate bars from chocolate which is manufactured by someone else. Mm-hmm. So the chocolate is manufactured for them by Barry Callebaut.
Biggest chocolate
company
in the world.
That's Barry Callebaut, the Goliath of chocolate makers, with more than 60 production facilities around the globe and $8 billion in annual sales. To their credit, Tony's purchases all their beans from 7 cooperatives in West Africa that they ensure are free of slave labor. And they pay a premium to do that. But the fact that the largest chocolate maker in the world is making all of their chocolate for them makes things complicated.
The cocoa butter for this bar is probably produced in a Callebaut factory in West Africa.
And why is that a problem? Well,
Callebaut is one of the named defendants in the Trafficking right. Victims Protection Reauthorization Act lawsuit. And so, can we say that they're actually working to eradicate slavery in the entire chocolate supply chain?
They're trying for sure. But due to its ties to Barry Callebaut, Tony's was removed from an important list of slave-free chocolate companies. And Tony's isn't the only indie brand with ties to Big Chocolate. Clay picked up another bar, one I had some history with.
Choco Love.
These guys have been around forever.
Right?
Yeah.
So
that was like the first
Yep.
Serious dark chocolate.
Right.
Well, I started buying in like the 1990s.
Part of this is looking at labels. So when you buy Chocolove products, you can be sure your purchase supports a better future for cocoa farmers and their family. So, Chocolove, 100% Barry Callebaut.
Really?
Chocolate.
Them too?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And so what they're doing is this claim about sustainable, social, and ethical is based entirely on what Barry Callebaut is claiming that they're doing on the farm.
So they go to Barry Callebaut. They're like, oh, you're sustainable and ethical, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
Good.
He kept going.
Other brands that you might see, Justin's.
Yeah, for sure.
Hormel.
Justin's also getting a lot of penetration.
Hormel? Owned by Hormel Foods.
Wow.
The Endangered Species Chocolate Company, they don't make chocolate. They're a marketing company. The chocolate is made for them by another company.
Does anybody on the shelf make their own chocolate?
I believe, Theo.
Theo,
in Seattle.
Okay. They're the only ones.
By the time Clay had gone through the whole shelf, it was clear that what the Mast Brothers had done was just standard practice in the weird world of chocolate. And Clay says the chicanery goes all the way to the top.
It's important to know that Hershey does not manufacture chocolate.
At all?
At all anymore.
What?
They're a candy company, not a chocolate company. And so the chocolate for them, if you actually go to Hershey, Pennsylvania, you will not find chocolate manufacturing anymore. They buy their chocolate in from big producers, Cargill, companies like that, big producers.
So when you go to Hershey Park and you're like
they're not making chocolate themselves. Wow.
If this makes you want to break free from the chocolate empire completely, you're not alone.
I just felt inherently like there was just something really messed up with the system itself.
But don't. Join the resistance instead.
And I wanted to build an alternative system.
Ride shotgun with a rebel commander on a risky mission after the break. Hey, everyone. Want a taste of some real wild chocolate? Delicious, nutritious, and 100% free of preservatives or moral conundrums. We got you covered. Kaleidoscope has joined forces with Louisa Abram and Stettler Chocolate to make a special box to go along with this very podcast. Now you can sample flavors from the banks of the Amazon without having to fight off jaguars and anacondas. Just visit www.stettler-chocolate.com to order your wild chocolate today. Link in the show notes.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast,
Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So what's the lifespan on one of these trucks doing this kind of work? You managed to keep it going? Infinity. Infinity with the right mechanic.
I'm with Emily Stone and Diane Coy. Emily is the founder of Uncommon Cacao, which acts as a matchmaker for 5,000 small farmers in 12 countries and hundreds of bean-to-bar chocolate makers in the U.S. and Europe. Diane is the new managing director of the Belize business. She's a Kekchi Maya who grew up in the area and spent time as a kid harvesting cacao with her parents. We're riding in a rusty 33-year-old Ford F-250 through the back roads of Belize, buying cacao from farmers.
So everything we're seeing is part of the Maya Mountains? Or?
Yeah, everything here. This is sort of the southern tip, and then it extends up towards Cayo.
Yeah, really beautiful.
How many communities are we sourcing cacao from now, Diane?
28.
28 communities in the Maya Mountains.
In the late 2000s, Emily was living in Boston, working on the campaign to pressure Hershey to address its child slavery problem. But the more she watched Big Chocolate say all the right things, the more she realized the system was never going to change from within.
There's no reason for chocolate to be causing poverty. It is the leftover inheritance of colonialism and of a world in which slavery was legal.
So Emily decided to help build a new system. Her vision was to act as a matchmaker for small farmers and bean-to-bar chocolate makers, to cut out those 12 layers of intermediaries and deliver more money to the farmers and better beans to the chocolate makers. And she knew the place to start was the Americas, which had the old varieties of cacao that the high-end chocolate community craved, and no system for getting it to market in good condition. In 2010, she moved to Belize and started talking to farmers. They told her they needed an easier way to sell their beans and a better price. She said, "Got it." So she bought a beat-up truck and offered to pick up their beans right at the farm. Then she built a professional fermentation station, which would help her charge more for these improved beans. Within a few years, farmers were getting twice the price for their cacao, and Maya Mountain beans had become famous. But Belize alone was a drop in the bucket. If she really wanted to build a more just chocolate industry, she needed to expand, and she knew where to go.
I was hearing from people in Belize, you know, oh yeah, my cousins in Guatemala, they have cacao, like, you know, have you ever been to Guatemala? And I hadn't. I get over there, and then I get the bus, and, you know, it was just kind of like asking around, like, okay, how do I get from here to here? Anytime I got to the next bus station, and everyone's looking at me like, who the F are you? Someone like asked me, they were like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm here to look at cacao. And all of a sudden they all were like, cacao? I was like, yeah, we have a lot of cacao. I was like, oh, great, that's what I'm here for. And literally as the minibus was like making its way up the mountain, we were stopping at every single person on the bus's cacao farm and getting out to like admire the pond.
Soon she's meeting everyone in the community and learning how important they were to the history of chocolate. They were Kekchi Maya, direct descendants of the people who had introduced chocolate to Europe when they sent a friendly delegation to the Spanish court in 1544, bearing beans from these very hillsides. Emily had stumbled into the heart of chocolate, an unbroken lineage going back thousands of years. But that didn't make their situation any easier.
Their market were coyotes,
which are basically intermediaries that drive around these back roads with a stack of cash and a handgun, and they buy, and a scale, and they buy whatever the farmers have to sell, whether that's corn, beans, cardamom, chili, cinnamon, cacao, allspice. There's no transparency around where that cacao is going. There's no technical assistance. And there's no fermentation. It's all washed cacao. So yeah, these producers were left without a market.
This was her dream scenario. The cacao varieties turned out to be excellent old ones, but the cacao wasn't being fermented at all. The farmers were just washing the pulp off as soon as they opened the pods, drying the beans, and selling them as fast as possible. The delicious flavors that emerged with fermentation were never being given a chance to develop. And it was all due to the dysfunctional market. The coyotes were going to pay the same super low price, no matter what. So Emily jumped on the opportunity. She moved to Guatemala, taught the farmers how to ferment and dry properly, bought the cacao for twice the going rate, and sold it directly to her growing list of bean-to-bar clients. But the coyotes did not take this lying down.
It's been a huge challenge for them locally. I mean, there have been security issues, so it has...
What kind of challenge? What kind of challenge or what kind of security issues?
There were physical threats made to association members.
The battle with the coyotes came to a head after the government arranged to build a new fermentation and drying center for the Farmers Association. Emily wasn't directly involved, but she'd promised to buy the cacao, which was a key to the deal. But one local coyote was particularly unhappy about losing his turf. And when the government representatives came to sign the paperwork, they met a most unwelcome welcoming committee.
Basically, this like disgruntled guy and his family surrounded the building where the signing was happening, armed with machetes, and threatened that if they signed it, like there would be violence. And so they left without signing and the project never happened.
The bad blood continued for a couple of years. And the farmers warned Emily and her team not to visit.
The coyote and sort of his family members were like, you know, if those people come, it's not going to be good.
But the fermentation center got built in the neighboring community. And once it became clear to all the farmers how much better the new system was, they made it very clear to the coyote that the times, they were a-changing.
We have found that over time, there is a circle of trust and security that is established by the farmers themselves, and that the consequences for anyone who interferes will be high.
Since then, Guatemala has become a prized source of cacao in the craft chocolate world. But that doesn't mean it's an easy business.
Bullets, razors, nails, cement, you name it, it's been found in a cacao bag.
And sometimes Emily finds herself thinking more like Walter White than Willy Wonka.
So I don't like guns, and I've never wanted us to have a gun. To me, the idea of having a gun owned by the company, out in the company vehicle, someone from the company, you know, having the ability to use a gun is terrifying.
But Guatemala is one of the poorest and most dangerous countries in the world, and a shipping container of cacao is worth tens of thousands of dollars.
There have been instances of coffee containers being robbed, violently in Guatemala. And so obviously we want to ensure that our cacao does not get stolen on its way to the port for export. We've always got guys with guns following our containers.
I hope by now it's abundantly clear that making great chocolate from responsibly sourced beans is really, really hard. Even when you're not dealing with guns and charlatans, sometimes you could do everything right and still fail.
I thought this was going to taste amazing. And this was like going to be like the gold of the forest.
Just ask Luisa Abram, the young Brazilian chocolate maker who began working with the Santo Daime ayahuasca cult in the Amazon. Luisa fell in love with the people. She paid fair prices for their cacao. She did everything right.
Yeah, it ended up being so crappy. It was just horrible.
What to do when you've just made the worst chocolate in the world? After the break.
Hold up.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I had fallen in love with all the story, with all like the like, it's so poetic, like crossing Brazil to go to the forest, go deep into the forest to get the wild cacao sauvage, and then to bring it back and to make chocolate. It was just so enchanting for me.
After meeting the Santo Daime cacao collectors on the Purus River, Luisa Abram devoted herself to making chocolate with the wild cacao of the Amazon.
I want to do something with purpose. I want to impact others' lives. I want to, like, leave my mark on this earth.
So she and her dad bought 20 kilos of cacao from the co-op, stuffed it into their extra luggage, and headed back to Sao Paulo. She'd built a micro chocolate factory in her parents' utility closet, and she roasted the beans in her tiny oven and blew off the shells with a hairdryer and ground them into a silky paste in her mini roller and made her very first batch of wild Brazilian chocolate. And when it had cooled, she lifted a piece in her hand, placed it on her tongue, closed her eyes, and let the essence of the Amazon wash over her. And
everything tasted so awful. For me, it was just so funky taste, so like ammonia and so like unnatural.
She ran it by some others to make sure it wasn't just her.
I gave it to my chefs and to my colleagues to to try, and they were like mocking of me, like, you went all the way to Acre to get this piece of, you know, like.
Naturally, Luisa assumed that she was the problem.
And I was like, okay, maybe I am the one doing it, doing something different. So I changed the roasting profile. I changed, like, I changed even my sugar. I changed. I changed everything, and nothing would work.
For the next 3 years, she kept making chocolate with the Perus beans because she was determined to make it work, but she just couldn't get the taste right. And while she managed to get the chocolate into stores around Brazil on the strength of the wild cacao's origin story, nobody ever reordered. So what do you do when you put everything on the line to become a great chocolate maker and you find yourself making terrible chocolate? Well, you need a guru, someone who combines deep expertise with almost spiritual insight. So Luisa summoned up her courage and sent a bar to our old friend, Mark Christian.
It was a qualified disaster. We don't need to get into all the particular details of the flaws. They were manifold, you know?
Yep, her bar sucked, and he told her so. But hang on, there was a shiny silver lining.
You can see through the beans, right? No matter how poorly they're prepped, whatever their post-harvest is and so forth, the DNA, the backbone of those seeds, is still there. And what struck me about that cacao and that bar she made, it was good enough that I thought this was the ultimate dark milk chocolate, potentially, without any dairy whatsoever. That's how much it was cream puffing the oral chamber.
Sorry, if you've never had your oral chamber cream puffed, you might not be familiar with the experience. But in the world of chocolate, or at least the world of Mark Christian, that's a good thing.
All that, you know, earthen milk, dairy, cream, and who doesn't like cream? I mean, you know, everybody likes cream. Everybody likes mama, right? So it was great, but it was masked. I mean, you could get the cream, but you were getting a lot of other detritus with it.
Like what?
You were getting the basics, such as cardboard, chalk, maybe even the blackboard itself was thrown in. It was all there.
In other words, it's not you, and it's not your beans either. They seem kind of great, but what's up with that fermentation?
I told them, there's something there in that valley. You know, don't let it go. You know, let's get this right.
Mark's recommendation was, fix that fermentation, get rid of all that funky ammonia, and you might have something really special on your hands. So how do you fix that? Well, remember Harvey Keitel's character in Pulp Fiction? The cleaner?
I'm Winston Wolf. I solve problems.
You need that guy for cacao.
It's funny, I almost feel guilty for showing up and being like, seriously, this is what you guys do?
And he exists. Dan O'Doherty lives in Hawaii. But he spends most of his time zipping around the planet, saving cacao farmers from their own mistakes. Mark told Luisa that Dan could make her problems go away. So Luisa invited Dan to her factory and showed him the Perus beans.
Right away, from the aroma, but also the very dark, almost blackened color, I knew that there were problems. I mean, over-fermented cacao has this funky, you know, barnyardy. I mean, I describe it as, you know, somewhat manure, you know, like cow manure smells. I mean, it tastes rotten.
So he started with some questions.
How often do you harvest the trees? What level of ripeness do you select? What is the lag time between cutting a fruit from the tree, opening it? Is there a delay between opening it and putting it into a box to ferment? How often do you turn it? How long do you ferment it? And how do you dry it? And there's even more sub-steps.
And in Perus, the answer to pretty much every one of those questions was wrong.
These boats are going up and down the river and collecting whole pods. Some guys would take their pods, collect them in the forest, and put them out in the riverbanks, and they'd just roast in the sun. Not good.
Basically, it was all a mess. The ayahuasca cult was picking overripe pods, and then they were waiting too long to open the pods. And then they were over-fermenting the seeds. And Dan had to break the news to them.
You know, you have to be gentle when you tell people, I mean, essentially, what you've been doing all this time is wrong. We're going to change pretty much every step.
Every step. Pick the pods earlier. Open them right away. Get those beans in the fermentation boxes. Unplug the holes in the bottoms of the boxes so they can drain. Turn the piles every day. Keep them covered with banana leaves. But they did it all. And when the new beans were ready, Louisa tried not to get her hopes up. She just made her chocolate, like always. Then,
I remember when I first put the chocolate in my mouth. It was like a drug.
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, it has like straight up dried blueberry notes. Like I had people taste it that didn't, I didn't prime them with anything. And they were like, oh my God, it tastes like you ground dried blueberries into it.
Finally, Louisa had a fantastic new chocolate on her hands, and her company took off. She added three other chocolates to her line, each coming from a different Amazonian community with its own wild cacao trees. And as it turned out, she had dialed in her skills just in time, because the kind of opportunity every bean to bar chocolate maker dreams of was about to come her way. And it was going to take everything she had to pull it off. Next week on Obsessions, Wild Chocolate.
Man, you must have been furious at a lot of people.
I had a little... it was a section of rage. And now pure rage. I would... You know, with a gun in my hand, I would have killed some people, maybe. Yeah.
Volker Lehmann. After years of dodging bullet after bullet in the jungle, he was about to take one right in the heart. Wild Chocolate is a Kaleidoscope production with iHeart Podcasts. Hosted and reported by me, Rowan Jacobson, and produced by Shane McKeon at Nice Marmot Media. Edited by Kate Osborne and Mangesh Hadakudor. Sound design and mixing by Soundboard. Original music composition by Spencer Stevenson, a.k.a. Botany. Production help from Bahini Shori. From iHeart, our executive producers are Katrina Norvell and Nikki Itor. Special thanks to Laura Mayer, Kostas Linos, Oz Wallachin, Aaron Kaufman, Will Pearson, Conal Byrne, Bob Pittman, Daria Daniel, and the team at Stettler, who are helping us make a very special chocolate of our own. That's right. We're working with Louisa and others to protect the rainforest and make delicious Amazonian chocolate. Visit www.stettler-chocolate.com to taste it for yourself. That's www.stettler-chocolate.com. And if you want to hear more of this type of content, nothing is more important to the creators here at Kaleidoscope than subscribers, ratings, and reviews. Please spread the love wherever you listen.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.